Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everybody, and thank you for joining us here on King Jordan Radio for Tuesday, September 17th, 2013. Ladies and gentlemen, we are honored and privileged to be joined with, we can now say she is a New York Times number one seller. Please welcome the artist of Picture Perfect, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Shannon Hogan. Shannon, good evening. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
So, how does it feel to be a New York Times bestseller?
Oh, man, I'm still on cloud nine. I can't really, it still seems very surreal, and I'm very, still very honored that people are picking it up and seem to be liking the book and what I tried to do with the story.
Yeah, I took a look at Amazon and nothing, you know, but positive quotes, and maybe later on in the program we'll read some of them, but I tell you, a lot of people, you know, wrote books about this situation, but yours got the most positive review as I, you know, scrambled through Amazon.
Yeah, you know, the story was so well known. I had been covering it for a couple of years before it became this, like, huge media sensation and trial of 2013. Before then, it was relatively unknown regional case, unlike some other cases where it's really highly publicized when the crime happens. This one didn't get that type
right.
of attention until the trial. So, you know, because I had worked on it for so long, I really feel like I got the inside story.
And when did you begin working on this project?
When it first happened in 2008, I was immediately drawn to the case and found it to be very interesting, and then started working on the book in 2010. And before that, I had written articles on the case for the magazine I worked at and was instantly really drawn to it.
And when you first started, as you told me before, you didn't think this was going to be a, you know, a national regional case, as it turned out to be, right?
Oh, no, I had no idea it would be so big. In fact, like, my original contract with my publisher was just for a paperback book. And then after they read the manuscript, they decided to invest in me and make it a hardback book. And I'm thankful that they did, because it ended up, you know, being on the bestseller list.
Oh, no question. Now, just to bring us up to speed, was there a mini trial? Did they set a date yet for that?
And it will be in October. So,
she rescheduled it
again,
Judge.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, the judge moved it from September to October, and it might get delayed again with scheduling conflicts and everything, as the justice system in Arizona creeps them along at a snail's pace. So we're going to have to wait a little bit longer to find out what will happen to Jodi Arias.
Wow. Now, you've been covering this part, you know, and there's a lot of people that say or think that, you know, Jodi might have been mentally abused. You say what to that?
In her relationship with Travis or in her early upbringing?
The way she was, I guess, as the defense pointed out, you know, a sex slave, you know, his little secret, dirty little secret, if you will.
I definitely don't think she was met. I don't buy that for 1 second. I think she was a willing participant. This wasn't an 18-year-old naive girl. This was a 28-year-old woman, you know, who was pretty experienced herself, and I don't think that she knew what she was getting into, and I think that, if anything, she used sex as a way to keep her hold on Travis, even after the relationship had fallen apart and he had expressed wanting to move on from his life. She would keep, you know, toying with him and kind of using her sexual assets to lure him back. And so I think that that was more what happened, and not that she was this poor, defenseless, you know, naive woman.
Well, just to play devil's advocate, why couldn't he just say, you know what, Jodi, I don't want no more sex from you. I don't want no more contact from you. I want you out of my life. You know, not a cheap thrill and try to get his rocks off every now and then. Why couldn't he just do that?
I think he really struggled with that and, you know, had kept pushing her away and then going back for more. You know, the short answer would be maybe that he's a man, you know, I know he was a man, and maybe, you know, that was, he was in that situation. Or the more elaborate response could be that he, you know, because of his Mormon background, it wasn't easy to find and date girls that would be as sexually, you know, charged as Jody. And so he kept going back to her because, you know, it was his avenue to explore his sexuality and his interest in that.
Okay, let's go back to the summer of 2008. The friends, they're the ones that discover the deceased body of Mr. Travis Alexander. Is that correct?
Yes. His friends, after not hearing from him for about 5 days, they all kind of gathered at his house. The next day, he was supposed to leave on that infamous trip to Cancun, and obviously didn't get that chance. He was there for 5 full days, and so quite into the decomposition process by the time he was discovered, sadly.
So how long was it from that summer day in June until she was officially charged with the murder of Travis Alexander?
It was 1 full month exactly from the time that Travis was found till she was indicted on the murder, and then she was arrested on July 15th, and his body had been found June 9th, so about a month into it. I mean, the case came together really, really quickly, and it was very apparent to the investigators that she was involved in it, and then, you know, as soon as they got the information on the DNA reports, it found that her blood was mixed with his blood on with a thumbprint on the wall, and her hair was at the scene. They quickly determined that she was guilty.
And early on, she was actually helpful in the investigation, right?
Yes, and she admitted that in court that she ended up using, you know, called into the police to pretend to offer her help. But at the same time, she was just wanting to know how if they were onto her yet. And it's really chilling when you hear her on those interviews and talking to the cops. And it seems like even in the beginning, like Detective Flores actually believed her a little bit, or he was just, you know, pretending like he did to, you know, get the case together. But I had heard from many of my sources that when people started identifying Jody as the potential murderer, that Detective Flores was really skeptical at first and not wanting to take that leap, and he thought maybe actually two people had been involved, and it wasn't until the evidence proved it. So he didn't go into it with the notion that Jody was guilty, now let's build a case against her. He was, you know, really exploring it with an open mind.
Right. So she was speaking to Flores via telephone until until a certain date in July. Is that accurate?
Yeah, until her arrest, she was talking with the police, and then on the day of her arrest, she didn't invoke her right, you know, to see an attorney. She went right ahead and continued to speak to Flores, and really, I think that was part of the reason the case ended up becoming so highly publicized is, you know, Jody could not stop talking, and, you know, she did media interviews and held a press conference, and people really gravitated to the story because, you know, it was pretty fascinating to watch this person, you know, who was accused of something so heinous, act so calm, and ultimately, you know, lie to the cameras over and over and over again, and it was pretty, you know, interesting to watch, like, the mind of a sociopath.
Absolutely, and you see her in the MySpace pictures. You know, she looks like maybe possibly she could have been a model, but she was a murderer. So that's what made it so fascinating in a lot of aspects, would you say? Would you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, I said it before, but I mean, obviously the case wouldn't have gotten as much attention if it wasn't for her being, you know, an attractive lady, at least at one point. By the time of the trial, she was not, you know, a far cry from who she had been at the time of when she was dating Travis. And, you know, a lot of people even debate the fact that she was ever beautiful just because she's got that cold, shark-like, you know, eyes and, you know, seems to be quite quite scary looking. And I agree with that, too.
And she seemed to get a lot, get away with a lot. We'll talk about that later with the Twitter and, you know. But first she had the story that she was nowhere near it, right? Was it me? You know, I wasn't even in that area. That's what she told police at first, right?
Absolutely. She changed her story about four times. Three changes were really dramatic, from, you know, not being there to people committing the murder to, you know, her doing it in self-defense. But her self-defense version of the story, too, changed quite a bit as she was spending a couple years in jail waiting trial.
Right, right. And then the story became two ninjas, I think a man and a woman. Did she tell that story to 48 Hours? Do you remember which version? Okay.
Yeah, that, and they she got was her on camera.
Yeah. But she almost had a press conference, if you remember, right?
Yes.
She was answering so many questions. I mean, you know, I never seen a jail do that for an inmate. I mean, I've been following trials for a while. I mean, have you?
Well, no. I mean, it's definitely, you know, every lawyer would advise their client not to talk to the media, and especially to hold press conferences. But Jody, she was the one who initiated that. So then, you know, to argue, once it finally went to trial, to argue, you know, try and get cameras not allowed in the courtroom and everything like that, I think the judge, you know, said, you were the one who started reaching out to the media and doing the camera interviews, and, you know, you can't become camera shy now that you're actually going to trial.
Is it true that she tried to represent herself in the beginning?
Yeah.
And if so, how did that work out?
Not in the beginning. She was notoriously a difficult client for her attorneys, and she went through like a revolving list of public defenders before eventually getting the counsel that represented her in court. And at one point, she was unhappy with the way things were being handled and believed her attorneys weren't working hard enough for her, so she fired them and tried to represent herself, which lasted all of a few days until the judge wouldn't allow her to have the stuff in submitted into court either. And she admitted that she was in over her head, and her attorneys were hired back on.
Unbelievable. And so the original people who were there, was it what, Nurmi? Was he there or he came later?
Nurmi came later, but he had stayed on for the longest. Jennifer Wilmot, the female attorney, she had only been on the case for about a year before it went to trial.
Okay, and there was another person that left, right?
Yes, there's an attorney named Victoria Washington who, right shortly after Jody fired her attorneys and was going to represent herself, her first attorney, Victoria Washington, stepped away from the case and actually withdrew from counsel.
Yeah, I interviewed you back in June, and you said Kurt wanted to actually beat Juan Martinez. Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this wasn't a case where, you know, that they just phoned in the defense and didn't really try to get their client off. And it wasn't because of a like, you know, Nurmi had about Jody. He actually admitted in court that he didn't like her and that she was, you know, a difficult client, basically. But he definitely put on a full-blown defense. And, you know, the prosecution's case was wrapped up in about a month, and the case stretched on for five long months. So the defense really tried to do everything they could, and I think it was probably a personal battle just because it got so heated between the two of them, and Juan Martinez has a way of really clearly making courtroom enemies because of his aggressive demeanor, it's also one of the reasons why a lot of people enjoyed the trial, because he was such a dynamic performer in the courtroom.
Absolutely. I want to play the exchange of Prosecutor Martinez when he goes one-on-one with Jody. Let's take a listen to this clip. We'll come back on the other side, and we'll talk about it.
When he was asleep, you went into his telephone, right?
Yes.
And you looked at what was on his telephone, right?
That's right.
The messages, what did they say? I'm not saying specifically, but what was the subject matter?
Things referencing specific sexual body parts interacting with other sexual body parts, things like that, and plans in the making of meeting up at hotel rooms or his house, things like that.
And you were very offended by that, right?
Yeah, offended would be accurate.
Right. And you were so offended that you still decided to go on vacation with him, though, right?
That wasn't why.
Well, no. You were very offended. You just told us that, right?
I didn't say very, but yes.
Okay, you were offended, right?
I was hurt.
Ma'am, didn't you just say you were offended?
Offended would be accurate.
And didn't you just say it was a good word, right?
Yeah, there's many descriptors to use.
But you just said just now it was a good word, right?
Yes, I think.
You think? It means you don't remember what you just said?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? You just said offended was a good word, and when I used it, then you took issue with it. Is it a good word or is it not a good word?
It depends on how you used it.
Well, I'm saying you're the one that I asked you the question, you were offended, and you said offended is a good word, right? That's what you said, right?
I think so, yes.
So, well, you think so means you don't know, right?
I don't know.
Well, this just happened. How is it that you are not remembering what you're saying?
Because you're making my brain scramble.
I'm, again, making your brain scramble. So in this particular case, the problem is not you. It's the questions being posed by the prosecutor, right?
No, not
yes
the questions.
Yes or no? Yes or no?
I was saying no when you interrupted me.
So so in this case, you're looking to point the finger at somebody else again, right?
No, it's my fault.
Well, you're saying it's the prosecutor that's asking you the questions, and that's creating a problem for you, right?
That's not what I said.
Well, you said it's the way you're posing the questions. You just said that, right?
I don't know.
You don't know what you just said, ma'am?
Objection argumented, Your Honor.
I don't know.
Didn't it just happen?
Yes.
So how is it that if it just happened, you can't even remember what you just said?
I think I'm more focused on your posture and your tone and your anger, so it's hard to process the question.
So the answer is, it's, again, the prosecutor's fault because you perceive him to be angry, right?
It's not your fault.
Well, is somebody asking you whose fault it is?
You did.
Well, you seem to be pointing it at the prosecutor, right? So you believe the reason that you can't be effective on the witness stand is because somebody is asking you questions in a way you don't like.
I think that was a compound question.
Ma'am, isn't it true that you are having problems up on the witness stand, according to you, because of the way the prosecutor is asking the questions, right?
Yes.
And so according to you, the truth with regard to this issue depends on the style that's being used, right? That's what the truth knows.
Objection argumentative. That characterizes her testimony.
And rephrase.
You're saying that you are having trouble telling us, you're telling us the truth from the witness stand, right?
Absolutely.
You're telling us that you're having trouble telling us the truth because of the way the questions are being posed, right?
Objection mischaracterizes her testimony.
What overall do you mean?
I have no problem telling the truth.
I'm not asking you if you have a problem telling the truth, but what you seem to be telling us now is that you have problems telling us the truth now because of the way the questions are being phrased, right?
That's not right.
So it's something else, then, that the prosecutor is doing that's bothering you, right?
I don't know how to answer that.
Well, it's something else that the prosecutor is doing that's stopping you from telling us the truth, right?
I don't know how to answer that.
Why don't you know how to answer that? You're the one that brought it up. You're the one that pointed the finger at the prosecutor, right?
Objection. Are you badgering?
Ma'am, you're the one that complained. about the way the questions were being posed by the prosecutor just now, didn't you?
Yes.
And you indicated that the prosecutor's posture was aggressive, right?
I didn't say aggressive.
You indicated posture, though, right?
Yes.
And there was something with the prosecutor's posture that you have problems with, right?
I don't know.
Well, no, you're the one that used the word posture, man. You're the one that said that you had problems with the posture. So is it the posture?
It's not the problem with your posture. It's that it creates a problem with me processing what you're saying because I'm focused more on your posture than the content of your question.
So you're saying that you need to take some more time between questions to answer them? Is that what you're saying?
Sometimes.
Well, no. Is that what's going to help your memory to take more time between the questions?
Sometimes.
What's your answer?
Sometimes.
Ma'am, with regard to this issue of posturing, do you remember back on July 15th of 2008 when Detective Flores interviewed you? Do you remember that?
Yes.
And he was sitting down, right?
Yes.
And his voice was very quiet, right?
Yes.
And when he was asking you these questions and his voice was very quiet, you still lied to him, didn't you?
Yes.
So it isn't have anything to do with the volume of the question then, does it, as to whether or not you'll tell the truth?
I'll always tell the truth.
Well, oh, so you'll always tell the truth. So you told the truth to Detective Flores back then, right?
I mean here under oath.
No, you said I always will tell the truth, right?
I said I will always tell the truth.
Right. Did you tell the truth? Isn't it true you did not tell the truth to Detective Flores?
That's true.
Okay. And he had posture or a demeanor where he was just sitting back, right?
He was leaning forward, but he
all right, he was sitting down, right?
Yes.
He wasn't standing, right?
Not for most of the interview.
No, he wasn't, was he? And the reason you're having problems now, is it because the prosecutor's standing?
It's my own internal mental problem, I think.
Well, if it's your own internal mental problem, that means that what you are telling us are inaccurate answers, right?
Objection.
No.
She said she had trouble recalling not telling the truth. This mischaracterized her testimony and this continued badgering.
Sustained us to the first objection, rephrase.
Here, are you having trouble because the prosecutor is standing?
Having trouble what?
What are we talking about here?
You're talking about the truth. I'm talking about memory.
Aren't we talking about answering the questions?
You keep saying truth. I'm referring to memory.
Aren't we, though, basically talking about you answering the questions?
Both regarding answering questions.
Right. Isn't that what we're talking about?
You keep mentioning truth. I'm not having a problem telling the truth.
All right. But you are having problems answering my questions, right?
I don't have a problem answering your question if I remember the answer.
So, but you just told us that you're having problems answering the question because of the prosecutor's posture. Didn't you tell us that?
That's not the direct reason, but that's a trigger.
Well, that's what you told us just now, right?
Something to that effect.
Right. And so, would you like it if I stood over here like your counsel was asking you the questions? Would that make you feel more comfortable?
Your Honor, improper comment on counsel.
Sustained, rephrase.
Would it make you feel more comfortable if I stood over here and used the lectern, ma'am?
Why don't you approach him before he does the same thing over and over again, Judge?
Mr. Nermey, are you asking to approach
yes.
us with an objection? You may approach.
Wow, Shannon. Again, when you hear it, what comes to mind?
Oh, man, he's just so effective and like, you know, was unraveling her lies and, you know, definitely like that. He was using that method to basically show that she was blaming other people for her problems and that she was still, you know, kind of, you know, skirting the issues. And it was really dynamic to watch, you know,
she was holding her own.
The progression. Yeah.
If you compare
definitely.
It to the other witnesses, you know, we saw what happened to Alice Levitt. You know, if you sort of seen an interview where basically they call every name under the book. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Piece. Did you see that piece?
I did.
Where? Yeah. I thought that was a little too, you know, overzealous by the Twitter nation and Facebook nation, if you will, you know, to send death threats. You know, I think we spoke about this before, but it bears saying it a second time. You know, people got to remember that, you know, she's paid to say something, and we might not agree with it. And my God, and there were also, I heard, jurors that were getting threatened because they didn't give the death penalty. You know, that worries me, you know, for future trials. You know, we might have a case that, you know, that somebody's actually innocent, and they'll be so scared by watching, you know, with the jury reaction, you know, that they'll be afraid to vote not guilty if they really feel that, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, I even experienced it firsthand. There was, the case was so polarizing.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get any death threats, but I did get a lot of, hate mail here and there. Just not a lot, but just some people just, like, friend me on Facebook to send me a nasty message or something. And people just, when they can be anonymous, people are just really cruel and harsh online. It doesn't really bother me, but, you know, other people involved in the case, they got it a lot worse than I did.
And you see, you could handle it. You're in your 30s, and I could handle it. But we see it so. I think I read something the other day. A girl took a life over AskFM.com. You know, I really think if they charge the person or the kid or whatever it is with some kind of tough penalty for, you know, even just writing something. You know, like, I'll kill you, even if nothing happens. You know, just the act of writing it, you know, a person should spend at least a half a year in jail, and then maybe people would stop. There should be, you know, more investigation into the social media, you know, situation. Your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
I mean, we have all these children that are taking their lives over the, you know, these, you know, Instagram and all these, you know, Facebook and Twitter, they really have their good spots, you know, so people could maybe track you down, or for me, you know, somebody, you know, wants to see where I am, so they could just look at the Facebook to see when I type, little things like that. But then these vicious bullies on the internet. And I don't want to get too much off topic, you know, with most honky book, but just wanted to, you know, say that, you know, Alice Lovett, and what's her last name? LaViolette. Does not deserve in any way, shape, or form, nor does the defense team to be, you know, because I personally think they want to get off it partly because of Jody and partly because they're probably getting massive panic attacks. I mean, how hard could you imagine, you know, one thing to do with Casey, but Jody became, I think, the most hated person in the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you.
Yeah. So your book, the card cover is available. I did hear the preview thing. Now, you could actually listen to it online, which is really cool, right?
Yeah, there is an audio version of the book as well. Yeah,
that's right,
still,
and the author is pretty cool. She's very, very interesting. To purchase the book, I saw a very low price. What is the price?
It's $20 right now on Amazon with a discount. It's $25.99 retail for the hardcover, and $10 for the Nook or Kindle version, and then $20 for the audio version.
Right. No, very interesting. And were you all overwhelmed with this one compared to, you know, this is your second book, right?
Yeah. I mean, it is incredibly hard to write a book.
In a good way, right?
Yeah. it definitely, like, throughout the trial, I was, you know, I also work a full-time job as a reporter and an editor at a family of magazines in Arizona. And to try and balance that with, like, going to court, coming home, doing TV interviews, following the court case, and then coming home and writing all night long, you know, it was
right.
definitely, yeah, I mean, it definitely was a hectic, crazy schedule. And like I said, writing a book is not easy. It's very difficult. It takes a lot of work, and especially with the true story, you know, to fill in the details, I had to get, you know, interviews and, you know, slog through the massive police report and the court files and the testimony. So at times it was overwhelming, but I was a really big fan of true crime books, and I had watched that watched shows like Dateline in 2020 and 48 Hours Mystery and all that stuff before. I actually ended up being on a lot of them. But because of that, like, I had a pretty good knowledge of, like, how I wanted to construct the book. And because I, you know, was a reader, I also was good at writing it, I guess, like, dissecting it. And
yeah, there's so many fascinating stories on, like, 2020. And my friend Aphrodite Jones will be on the show next month. Has a program, True Crime, with Aphrodite
Jones. I watch
her show. You watch
yes.
the show? It's wonderful. You know, the West Memphis 3 episode, I don't know if you saw that one, where they were,
yeah.
We saw that, you know, that story. She wrote a book on that. She's also been involved with a lot of New York Times bestsellers, but, you know, she wrote lots and lots of books, but she'll be here in November, you know, maybe you'll join the cast of ID. I think you're on the Oxygen channel, right? Talking
yeah, I'm
going to
be doing Snapped. I've been on a lot of shows before the book came out. I did Dateline. I did 2020. I did nightly shows like Dr. Drew and Geraldo and Justice with Janine Pirro. And then I did what will be coming up. I'm on an episode of Deadly Sins. On the Jodi Arias case. I did an episode of Scorned on a different case recently, and I'm doing back-to-back episodes of Snaps for my first and second book that will air in December.
Now, honest answer here. When I saw it, I was like, you know, the kid from Home Alone. When I saw Jane DeLez, you know, who has probably followed the trial as long as I did, say that she had a book coming out. You know, like I said, I was like the kid from Home Alone. I just could not believe it. Not that she's not talented and everything. I have a couple of her books. But she has not been involved with the book, with the story, with everything. She doesn't live over there. You know, she does a lot of great stuff, but, you know, that, in my opinion, if I'm going to spend $20+, I want somebody who has an interest of living with it, if you will. You know, like I had Stacey Honowitz here, and she takes care of sex traffickers, Jerry Sandusky's, if you will. So, to me, I would buy a book like that. I'd rather buy your book, I'm trying to say, than Jane Velez. Because I know the time and effort you put on. I just don't have the evidence to see that, you know, that Jane Velez, you know, had all the information that you did and put all the work in that you did. And that's my opinion.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. People who watched her show probably actually will remember I was a frequent guest on her show up until April.
Yes.
And actually had helped, like her, you know, not knowing at the time she was going to write a book, and I don't think one was in the works.
I think
until
she came with
April.
That came out recently. I think she just decided late in the game.
It's two very different takes on it. Like, I let my book unfold like a story, like if you were there watching the investigators at work, you know, sorting through the crime scene evidence and everything, she presents it more of the story of Jody, you know, trying to expose her background. I actually haven't read her book, but, like, yeah, I mean, obviously she has her own television show and has a way of promoting it and stuff. So,
oh, yeah.
It's unfortunate that it went down the way it did because she had me on the show for quite a while, and then my agent was her agent, and my agent ended up dropping her as a client after because she found it to be distasteful to do what she did the way she did.
Are you serious? She dropped her. Wow. Yeah, because I wouldn't believe that Jane would have you on week after week, day after day, if she thought she was going to, you know, start to work on a Jodi Arias book. I mean, who in the right mind would you? Go ahead.
Yeah, obviously I wouldn't have done the show if I would have known. Not only that, did I also gave her the copy of the police report that I had purchased and gave her exclusive details on her show every night. Her producers would call me, and I would tell them the details in my book and details I'd found out through my reporting. And obviously, I would not have done that if I would have known that she was going to take it and decide to write the book in, you know, the last minute. I mean, I think, you know, obviously, I didn't own the story, so it's up to people if they, you know, like, want to pursue it. I don't want to trash her or anything. You know, I don't know her personally.
No, I think she writes wonderful books, but I just think she didn't have the... It'd be like me writing a Jodi Arias book. I mean, I followed. I know some things. I could have took a tape recorder and interviewed a few people. That's what I do, and that's what I've been doing all my life. But the thing is, you know, just looking at it from objectional, you know, it doesn't make sense, the whole thing, you know. It's just the timing is very weird, to say the least.
Oh, yeah.
It's very awful.
I found it, you know, obviously it was a conflicting thing for me, and then to come out, like, before mine and stuff like that was obviously disappointing. But there's, you know, like you said earlier, there's more stories. Lots of people wrote books and did different things, and I think what sets mine apart is just the way I approached it, and also really wanted to tell Travis's story because I felt his was being overlooked, so I delved into more of that. And so, you know,
and the way I look at it is she could come out with any book any day of the week, twice on Sundays. To come out with a Jodi Arias book, knowing that she brought you on there, you know, all throughout the trial, which was a long trial, that's where it's very curious, the whole situation with Jane Velez having a book. Listen, I think she has the best show from Nancy to Dr. Drew to you know, Showbiz Tonight, any of that. I think she has the best show, but I just don't agree with the whole book situation. And
thank
I wouldn't
you.
Waste my $20+ because I don't think she put enough into it. There's no evidence of that. We know that you put your heart into it, and if anybody takes a look at the Amazon comments, I'm not just saying this. People are saying it for themselves. So
I definitely, you know, don't. I mean, from what I understand, too, I'm not positive, but I think that she had a ghostwriter working on the case because it was pretty quick to push out the book. But, you know,
I have a body language friend, and I won't mention her name, but she said that she smelled something fishy. Yeah, I'll leave it like that. Okay. Did you get a chance to see the movie? And if so, what did you think of it?
Well, I'm actually found out, I mean, I didn't work with the movie or anything like that, but I found out when it aired that my voice was in it, which I thought was pretty interesting. It was a quote from one of the shows I had done, and they have me doing like a voiceover with like a compilation of all the different like news stories about the case. It's an interesting work of fiction. It's like so far removed from the real story. You can almost, I mean, it can almost, you know, be called a different, you know, case. Like very few things were really involved were actually put into the movie. I mean, including like, you know, characters were kind of made up as competition characters to further the plot. And it was just very like, you know, they had Travis and Jody meeting in Vegas, but immediately she's having sex with them, which is not even in part of her opinion. So I thought it was pretty interesting, you know, to watch it. First, it was infuriating because it's like, that's not how it happened. That's not how it worked, you know, and stuff. And then it was just silly. Towards the end, they would even, like, in the movie version, they don't have her ever moving back to California. And they talk about, like, in the trial, her getting gas cans. Not to spoil it for anyone. They talk about her having gas cans. And it's like, why would she need gas cans if she never moved in the book? I mean, in the movie. So it just kind of got silly towards
right.
the end.
Right. They don't have the little things.
Yeah.
Like, that's very important. Now, during the trial, what do you think, you know, was the most entertaining day? There was a lot of entertaining days for me, but what was some of yours?
Yeah, I mean, I remember the day that Jody took the stand, and we had no idea, like, if she was going to testify or not. And then, you know, so it was like this moment of like, wow, what is she going to say? And then she just droned on for 18 days, and it was like, you know, it became really tedious and boring and interrupted frequently by long, sidebars and lengthy objections and everything like that. And there were a lot of days of the trial where it's just really mind-numbingly boring, and it was hard to even imagine, like, that could be the case, but, I mean, it definitely turned out to be that that way, you know, just when she droned on and on again about every little detail of her past and, you know, houses that she was buying with boyfriends and all that stuff, it actually became sometimes boring, but definitely when Juan took the stage, those were the best days, like, the line outside the courtroom would be really long on the days where he was talking. He was, you know, questioning her and grilling her and, you know, getting her to really admit and open up at the end and, you know, kind of he seemed to break her towards the end. That was really entertaining to watch.
The year, I mean, one day for me was when Dr. Samuels took the stand, very cocky, a little confident, you know, with a swagger, you know, PSD, he's explaining it, they go into HLN, and, you know, they're giving him credit, you know, he's coming across good to the jury, yada, 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 and then 20 minutes later, when Juan gets a piece of him, he's like, you know, he's sweating, he's shaking, he's like, he was just like going from one extreme to looking like, you know, I'm going to really get Jody out of this situation by explaining she has this mental disorder called post-traumatic stress disorder. And in the beginning, I thought he was convincing, but I thought Juan Martinez shred him to pieces. What do you think?
Definitely. I agree with that assessment completely. You know, beginning, it was very, like, it's almost like he didn't know what he was getting himself into, and then Juan took the stage, and it was just really amazing to watch the transition.
Yes, and the same thing can be said when Juan first took it up with Miss Alice L., and he's talking about the tale is he talking about? Do you remember?
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
I couldn't believe it. I was, like, half asleep watching that, and then I had to, like, wait a minute. Did he just say that?
Yeah.
I was like, whoa. One thing about Juan, people have to admit, he is entertaining. I mean, he will not make you snooze like some of the other counsels, you know?
Real guy, too. Definitely, you know, different personality. Like, I got in trouble for taking pictures with some people, but, you know, people wanted to, he was just being a comedian, he was just a nice person.
Yeah, there's a couple ways to look at that. You know, obviously it makes him look, you know, one way and, you know, not fair, but the other way it looks him, makes him look human from the way he became off on TV, because if you only address him from the way he was seen on TV, he really looked like a son of a bitch that didn't care about anybody except
mm-hmm.
The client that he was representing. And he did that very effectively. But you know, he showed that he was a human being when he was giving out the autographs. And I believe he gave one to somebody on their cane or something like that. And that was, mm-hmm. that was very nice. But there is also another case, I believe, where the lady by the name of Deborah Milkey just got out. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Do you know anything about that?
Yeah. So just because, you know, it's another case that's in my state, and it's you know, a female killer, and I find it to be really interesting. Although I really don't like to mess with the story involving kid murders. It's just, they're, you know, they're such innocent
right.
victims that I have a hard time. It turns my stomach to have to, for a mom to kill her own kid. It's an interesting case. I mean, you know, from the 80s, and I write about it in the book that, that, you know, for her story, for the trial, the conviction to be overturned during the Jodi Arias trial, you know, left only two women on Arizona's
death
row.
Well, the detective had a very shady background, and he was known to lie, is what I saw. I don't know, maybe you know more about it.
Yeah, definitely the confession is very interesting. You know, to not have another witness and to have it be no recording made, and she didn't sign it, and she denied giving that confession. But there's also a good case. Like, there's a bit of evidence, you know, to show that she conspired with her roommate and another man to have her son killed. I mean, why would the roommate and this other man kill that woman's son? They got nothing out of it. And also, it's kind of strange to, why would any parent have a life insurance policy on their child? Is kind of beyond me. But she did.
So you're saying when you read into the facts of the case, it doesn't look so good for Miss Milkey?
I don't think so. Yeah, I mean, she'll probably get out and not go back to prison. Just
oh, she was released, no?
Going out. She's released, but they're going to retry her.
Oh, they're going to retry her. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sure if the that damaging, as you read, then I'm sure then, well, I can't say for sure, but I'm sure that, you know, they'll get her acquitted. They'll find her guilty if, you know, those facts stand. Your thoughts on Judge Stevens?
I thought she was very fair and very, I thought she was very effective and worked like, almost like come across like sympathetic to Jodi, but it was only because she
yeah.
didn't want, yeah, there to be any chance of it being overturned on appeal. So she went out of her way to make sure that she had, you know, it was fair and like all the evidence that, you know, was submitted into court that backed up this crazy, you know, tale of, you know, that the sexual abuse and stuff, the judge allowed it in.
She let, you know, a lot of legal analysts say that things that would never normally be let in,
mm-hmm.
she let in everything but the kitchen sink, you know. But this was a death-qualifying murder case, so I guess, like you said, she didn't want to be you know, found, like, that she did something that they could use as to get another trial. But, you know, most people don't get second trials. It rarely happens. And I see no grounds, zero, and tell me if I'm wrong, for Miss Arias to get another trial.
Nope, I don't think, except for maybe the publicity that the case ended up garnering. But I don't think she will have another I don't think there will be a successful appeal.
Right. Now, we were going to ask you, how is she allowed to still, through her friend, talk on Twitter?
You know, it's a situation where they can't really do anything about it. She's allowed to have phone calls in jail, and she then tells that person over the phone, and they post it. So it's nothing that they can really do or control. so it's pretty
to a third party. Yeah. Right.
Mhm.
Absolutely. I heard you on another program. You're close with Sky, right?
Oh yes, I am. She was nice enough to do an intro for me on another program. We became friends through the trial, and I found her to be such a sincere and really honest and, person who they didn't, a lot of people don't remember, but during the trial, they actually declined doing all media interviews. They felt like
wow.
They didn't want to, yeah, so they only started doing media interviews once she was found guilty in May, and, but I had been talking to her for several years because we had worked, she had helped me and interviewed with me for my article I did on the case, and I found her and her husband to be very nice, honest people who decided only to speak to the media because they wanted something good to come from Travis's murder and the murder of their friend by telling the world about who he was when he was alive.
Wow. Wow. Any plans for a third book?
Definitely. I'm taking some time apart from it, and I'm not going to work on anything until at least January of next year, start looking for a case. And I have some that are in the works that are pretty interesting. I don't know that they'll ever be as, big as the Jodi Arias case, but definitely.
Right.
I
never
love writing.
Never know.
My passion. Yeah, I love telling people stories. I love to be writing, so definitely going to continue to work on it. And I actually have, some ideas that I would want to do. And I'd probably stick to regional Arizona cases because I feel like you should kind of be there to be local to find the sources and do, like, the interviews and really understand.
Right, when you're close to the scene, you got a whole different feel for it. Like if you're in L.A. or New York, you can't have the same type of feel as if you live in the neighborhood and you know how the people are, you have a little bonus. So, did you follow the Zimmerman trial?
I did. It was kind of overlapped with the Jodi case, so I didn't super, I wasn't really following it that much, but I found that to be just a really sad case, too. There were definitely no winners or anything. It just, I felt like that it was a thing that shouldn't have happened, and now all the things that are happening surrounding him and his divorce, it's kind of telling and indicative of the type of mentality he was.
No question, but Murder 2 they went for, a lot of legal analysts thought that was a little over, if you're just by the burden of proof.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate that the stand your ground laws out there, in Arizona and most other places, you're only allowed to use the amount of force being used against you to defend your own life. So if, Trayvon Martin didn't have a gun, he couldn't have used the gun to kill him. But because of the law, I feel like the jury had to find the finding that they did because the way it was, the law they had to follow, and that it's an unfortunate law that hopefully there'll be something that will overturn it because it shouldn't be. It's almost like a legal murder. You're allowed to kill, that's unfortunate.
No, you're 100% right. I mean, over here where I live in New York, you got a gun in your peg without even doing anything. You're going up to jail for 2 years. I mean, there's just no guns allowed. I mean, I like that because at any given moment, somebody could do something crazy with a gun.
Absolutely.
Look what happened earlier this week with the guy from Washington. Killed, 13 people, something like that?
Yeah, so sad.
Very sad. That's one thing that we saw with the Jodi Arias case is when it came down to the sentencing, and I saw the sister and the brother and they gave such touching words to the court and to the jurors why they should find her, I think to find her dead, you know, that the cop, the lady, when she said that she never saw anything like that in her line of work, you know, it very, very sad. And it was very sad to see his brother, because he got very angry and emotional at the same time, it looked like to me. And
yes,
it was just sad to hear all the stuff that he went through with, you know, going through the marriage problems. What was your thought when you saw him?
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I mean, these cases happen all, like, you know, there's murders, like, every day. It's interesting the ones that become so highly publicized, but, it's all super sad all the way around. It's a tragedy, and there's no winners.
Right. We just hope that, you know, people out there like a Jody, someone who's sick like that, will look at what happens to people that think they're doing something that's stupid, and maybe we'll think twice, you know? That's the only hope we can have.
Definitely.
Okay, your book, Picture Perfect, a 3-year deal that you worked on with a lot of interesting stuff. Don't have the quotes right in front of me, but if you go on to Amazon.com, right?
Yes. In Barnes & Noble bookstores, it's even in, you know, local grocery stores and places across, you know, it's available everywhere right now, so people can find
it. And you could go on your Twitter, you have all the correct links, and Picture Perfect, you know, we got Christmas coming up, make a great Christmas gift, and buy the book for the reasons I mentioned earlier. In my opinion, you put lots of years in, you didn't put a couple months in, you know, you put your heart with it, you bleeded with this book, and I congratulate you 100% on being a New York Times number one seller.
I'm not number one, but I did make the list, so thank you very much.
Right. Yes, you're part of New York, so.
Yeah.
And thanks for coming on. We wish you luck with your book as we go on.
Yes, follow me on Twitter or Facebook. I'm not a big tweeter, but I accept all friend requests on my Facebook page, and also my website, shannahogan.com.
There you go. Shanna, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Here tonight.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we'll speak to you soon. Anytime. Okay, folks, we're going to have Joey Jackson tomorrow night at 9 p.m. And at 6 p.m. on the West Coast, Joey Jackson from HLN tomorrow night. Follow me at Mr. King Jordan on Twitter, facebook.com/KingJordanRadio. We'll see you tomorrow with Joey Jackson. Take care, folks.